Welcome to Banking Transformed, the top podcast in retail banking. I'm your host, Jim Roos. In today's episode of the Banking Transformed podcast, we are revisited by Jacob Morgan, five-time best-selling author and renowned leadership futurist. Jacob has worked with and interviewed hundreds of top business leaders around the globe to uncover the most critical leadership trends shaping the future of work today. He's here to share his groundbreaking research on the top seven leadership trends for 2024 and how they'll impact the banking industry. Jacob reveals actionable strategies to help you and your organization navigate the complexities of modern leadership. From leading with vulnerability to enhancing the employee experience, prioritizing skills over jobs, and embracing AI and the hybrid work models, Jacob offers practical strategies for banking executives looking to future-proof their organization. There's no question that the dynamics of leadership are in constant state of transformation as organizations grapple with the impact of hybrid work, the escalating demand for talent, and the fear of the impact of AI. So, Jacob, it's great to have you back on the show. You and your wife were both guests early in the creation of the Banking Transformed podcast, and your shows continue to generate quite a bit of listening. While we were in the throes of COVID when you were on the show the last time, what has been the greatest change in the skills needed and the challenges presented to be an effective leader?
Oh, man, specifically for COVID. So when I wrote the book...
Actually, since COVID. Yeah, since because everything changed in COVID with far as, you know, state of work. But I'm wondering, you know, what have you seen as a transformation since 2020?
Oh, since 20, I think there's been a few things. So when I wrote the book, The Future Leader, that one actually came out in 2020. And it, I think it was right around the pandemic, because I think the pandemic was officially declared a pandemic in March, I believe.
And March shut down sports, March 12th.
March 12th, yeah. And my book came out, I think, right around that time, or maybe a few weeks before. So it was very close. But the research that I did for that book was specifically looking at things like mindsets, skill sets, challenges for current and aspiring leaders. And so, from that regard, I don't think there's been too much change as far as mindsets and skills. So some of the mindsets, and I don't know if you want to go over all of them, but some of the mindsets that I thought were really important that these 140 CEOs identified were things like having the mindset of the chef, which is about balancing technology and humanity. Having a servant, a global citizen mindset, I should say, which is about seeing big picture. It's surrounding yourself by people who are not like you. There was also the mindset of the explorer, which was this idea about having a growth mindset. And then there was also the mindset of the servant, which is not quite the same thing as servant leadership, but there were some similar attributes in there. And then we had skills like the futurist, which is being able to not predict the future, but to not be surprised by what the future might bring. We had the skill of the coach, we had the skill, and coaches helping make other people more successful than you. The skill of the translator, which was about listening and communication. The skill of Yoda, which was about emotional intelligence, specifically empathy and self-awareness. And then which one am I missing? So there was five. So we did the coach, the translator, we did Yoda. Oh, that's the one I missed. Technology teenager. Yep. I thought I said that one. And that's really the skill of embracing technology and not running from it. That's especially very true and relevant now as we think about this ChatGPT, generative AI-driven world.
So you just recently came out with a PDF white paper around the top trends of leadership for 2024. And the first one you mentioned, it was kind of interesting because I related to it quite a bit, the importance of leading with vulnerability while also showing competence. I sometimes look at it as saying, you don't have to be the smartest person in the room, but you've got to be the best listener to be able to put all these pieces together. How can banking leaders strike a balance effectively in this way where, you know, legacy thought was you got to be the best, you got to be the highest, you got to be the smartest, when really that doesn't work to your favor as much anymore?
Yeah. And by the way, if anybody wants, can I tell people where they can read the definitely. PDF if they're interested?
Yeah.
So if anybody wants the PDF, we actually just put it out. I don't even think we made it completely public to everybody yet, but I think by the time this episode airs, it will be. They can go to topleadershiptrends.com and you can just download the PDF there and you can see what those eight are. Leading with vulnerability, that was actually the subject of my most recent book that came out. And it's this idea of, so we've been talking about vulnerability for a long time over the past few years. Obviously, Brené Brown pioneered a lot of work in that space. But vulnerability in the context of work is really about exposing a gap that you have, a gap in maybe experience or wisdom or knowledge or emotion or skill, whatever it is. It's basically saying, I have a gap in this area. Inside of the workplace, well, let me start with personal life. In your personal life, there's a lot of value in that. It creates connection, relationships with your spouse, your significant other, with your friends. It's very clear why you want to do that. At work, you have a different dynamic. You have a boss, you have employees, you have projects, deadlines, a hierarchy, you're being paid a salary, you have customers. And so you have to imagine if you keep showing up to work each day, just talking about the gaps that you have, eventually someone's going to look at you and say, why are you working here? So leading with vulnerability, on the other hand, is talking about the gaps that you have and demonstrating what you're trying to do to close them. So a very simple example would be, again, let's say we'll go with banking. Again, it doesn't really matter what industry you're in, but let's say your boss gives you a big project to work on and you screw it up and you make a mistake. You go to your boss and you say, you know, I'm really sorry. I know this was an important project, but I made a mistake. I screwed up. Now, it's great that you have the psychological safety where you can go to your boss and acknowledge the mistake that you made. But I can promise you that your boss at the time is not looking at you and saying, oh, gee, thank you so much for telling me about this mistake. Your boss is probably looking at you and thinking, okay, now what? Like the customer is still unhappy. The project still hasn't been done. The deadline still hasn't been met. The revenue goals still have not been achieved. Like, what are you going to do about it? Leading with vulnerability, taking that same scenario, is saying, hey, I'm really sorry I made a mistake. I acknowledge how important this project was, but here is what I learned from the mistake that I made. And here are three things that I'm going to do to make sure that that mistake never happens again. So I have the vulnerability component, but I'm also adding in the leadership component, the competence piece. I'm demonstrating what I'm trying to do to close the gap. And that is a very important distinction. Nobody wants, right? If you have friends, for example, who are always telling you like, oh yeah, I want to quit smoking. I want to exercise. I want to eat healthy. Your question to them is like, great, have you started? Are you exercising? Are you starting to eat healthy? Like, tell me what you're doing. You don't just want people to come to you and talk about the gaps that they have. You want them to demonstrate some level of closing those gaps. And this is especially true inside of the organization. Even if you don't know something, or you make a mistake, or you need help with something, that's fine. You can acknowledge that, but then also talk about what you're trying to do to solve the problem, right? That's a very, very important distinction. And so the whole idea of leading with vulnerability is about the two most important roles that any leader has, competence and connection, demonstrating and being good at your job and being able to connect with your people. For a long time, we've been focusing on originally, we started very much focused on competence and we ignored this whole idea of connecting with your people. Then over the past few years, we've been very, very obsessed with connecting with your people and we forgot about competence. So 2024 and going forward is about bringing together both of those things. Because if you only focus on competence, people will look at you and they'll say, yeah, you're really great at your job, but I feel like I'm working for a robot. I don't feel engaged or motivated or inspired by the work that I'm doing, even though you're really talented. Similarly, if you only focus on connection, people might say, oh, I feel engaged and empowered and inspired by the work that I'm doing, but I don't think this person's a great leader. They're not demonstrating any kind of leadership or competence. I feel like I could do their job. So you want to be able to do both. You want people to connect with you, and you also want to demonstrate that you have the capabilities and the skills and the competence to be good at your job.
You know, it's interesting. We talked about the post-COVID thing, and one of the things that came out of that is a whole lot of hybrid work. And yeah. Banking executives tend to like things the way they were as opposed to the ways they can be. So they've been really struggling with the whole concept of work ethic in a post-pandemic environment, in a hybrid work environment. What strategies have you seen, not just in banking, but overall, where executives really try to build the next stage of work at their organizations? How have you seen leaders really excel at building the next wave of banking, be it hybrid, be it full-time in office or not. How do they go about the process of being a leader in that case?
Well, I think there are a couple different angles to look at. So first of all, I'm a big believer in in-person work. I'm not saying you need to be there 9 to 5, but there is substantial value for in-person work. You know, it's like for my industry, I give a lot of speeches to companies. And there's a difference between productivity versus impact. So can I deliver more speeches sitting, staring at a camera in a day than I can deliver in-person speeches? Yeah, I could probably do 4, 5, 6 of these sitting in my pajamas, staring at my camera. Is the impact going to be the same if I'm doing a virtual speech versus if I'm on a stage, I can see people, people can see me, I can look at body language, I can get together with people and talk to them? No, the impact is going to be far greater in person. Similarly, in different aspects of work, if you're meeting with customers, you're looking at leadership training and development, coaching and mentoring, things like that. Yeah, you could probably get that stuff done behind a screen, but is it going to be far more impactful if you do that in person? Absolutely. So for certain things, there's still tremendous value for in-person work. Now, I think part of this also comes down to sort of two things. One is the goals and aspirations of the individual. So if you are somebody who wants to break through beyond mediocrity, if you are somebody who wants to get into a leadership role, leading a team, a function, a business, maybe one day a company, you need to be in person. You have to be in person. There's just no way around that. Why? I think a few reasons. Number one, you're going to get the coaching and the training from executives directly. They're going to see you. You're going to make an impact on everybody, right? By having that kind of a presence. So there's a tremendous, and having that one-on-one time with these executives, I think is tremendously valuable if you have those aspirations of leadership development. If you are somebody who doesn't have those aspirations, you're content being where you are. You're content not excelling and growing and ever moving into a leadership role. Hey, by all means, don't show up to the office. I think a lot of people would argue that that's being content with some form of mediocrity if you don't have those aspirations. And it might sound cool now, but I can promise you, especially if you're younger, it might sound cool to be in your 20s, never having to step foot into an office, making a salary, and maybe making some gradual improvements. But I can promise you that when you're in your 30s, when you're 40s, and you have these different goals that you've set in your life, where maybe you want to have a family, you want to buy a house, you want to, I don't know, go out to nice restaurants, you want to do these types of things, I can promise you that you're going to wish that you had that more senior role. And every single CEO that I have ever interviewed has told me the same thing. If you want to get into a leadership role, it requires sacrifices. You are going to have to do more. You are going to have to care more. Part of that means showing up to the office. Again, that depends on your goals and aspirations. If you don't have those goals and aspirations, by all means, you can work whenever, wherever you want. Just don't expect that kind of growth and development. I think on the leadership side, it really depends on what you need and what you're looking for from your team. Obviously, if you have all hands meetings, if you're having customers come into the office, if you're talking about strategic planning and decision-making meetings, yeah, get your employees into the office for that. However, if somebody's just at home, they're catching up on some stuff, they're working on a presentation, they're doing a couple phone calls, they're doing some project management work, then yeah, as a leader, you can have that flexibility and say, yeah, it's not really necessary for you to come into the office today. I think a lot of the recent research that's been done by Nicholas Bloom at Stanford and a couple others show that on average, what the balance is around 3 days in the office, 2 days from home. On average, as far as what the comfort level
yep.
is.
Yep.
But, you know, again, it really depends on the work that you're in. It depends on your goals and aspirations. It depends on the requirements of the business as well.
So it's interesting when you talk about the whole work environment right now, and when you look at digital transformation in almost any industry, how should leaders look at upskilling and reskilling initiatives? And at the same time, how do you make it so that existing employees don't continuously feel threatened by the digitalization of their jobs?
So how do you upskill?
How do you balance the upskilling and reskilling with the overall change that you have to have towards the digital future? I mean, as I go to see organizations now and trade groups and everybody else, I think everybody's afraid of AI. Everybody's afraid that this is going to change. It's going to impact their job or make it so they lose their job. Well, at the same time, their organizations many times are trying to upskill and reskill for exactly that reason.
Yep.
How do organizations, how does leadership make it so employees know that they are part of the future? Because I think that's the fear that's in the back of everybody's mind.
Yeah.
Is it a skill or is it a strategy?
Well, first of all, you should feel threatened for your job. You should 100% be fearful of your job. There's this big stigma that fear doesn't belong in the workplace. I disagree. I think having a little bit of fear is actually a good thing. Fear is what keeps you working hard. Fear is what keeps you motivated. Fear is what keeps you doing good quality work. Fear is what keeps you doing the things that you need to do. If you show up to work every day and you have no fear, you're laissez-faire, you know, I don't care. I don't need to work. I don't need to invest my own time in training and development. I don't need to pay attention to these technologies. I'm in my comfort, you know, I'm just chilling all the time. You got a problem. You should be showing up to work thinking like, wow, my company is really making some investments here. I should probably figure out what's going on, right? I should probably learn about what things like ChatGPT are. I should probably connect with some peers. I should probably talk to my leader and figure out some potential opportunities for career pivots if I need to in the future. I should talk about what the future of my role and my job looks like. I should ask myself, what skills do I have? And if something does happen to my job, where else can those skills be applied? You 100% should be having those conversations if you are in banking or if you are in any role for that matter. You should feel a little bit threatened. You should feel a little bit scared by the things that are happening. I mean, if not, there's something wrong. So that's first of all. Second of all, what should organizations be doing? I think leaders should be very honest and upfront with their people. I don't think you should sugarcoat anything. If you do see that there is some potential threat to somebody's role, you should tell them and say, hey, look, over the next year or so, we're considering implementing something like a ChatGPT in this role. So why don't we sit down together and figure out if you no longer had to do this aspect of your job, what else would you be able to do instead? Now, there's also a big difference between automating a job versus replacing a human. Accenture did this over the past few years. They automated around 20,000 jobs, but they didn't replace any people. These were jobs in finance. These were who we would call number crunchers. And these were 20,000 people who essentially were collecting data, analyzing data, crunching data, and then presenting the data to their clients. And Accenture was able to use AI. They were able to use a lot of bots that could do the work of those 20,000 employees in no time. But they didn't fire any of these 20,000 employees. Instead, what they did is they said, you know, that aspect of your job, we don't need you to worry about anymore. Instead, why don't we retrain you and upskill you to become more like a strategic advisor to your client? So we'll have the bots do the data. You help the clients make sense of the data. Help them figure out the strategic decisions and actions they should be taking as a result of the data that you're getting. That is the conversation that leaders should be having with their employees. So I think being honest and being upfront with your people, but at the same time, helping them figure out that path forward is the right way to go. It's very dishonest, I think, on behalf of leaders, if you have somebody, let's say, in finance, and you know the technology is going to play a role there. I think it's very dishonest to go to your employees and say, you got nothing to worry about. You can be here forever, no problems. You know that's not true. I think the best thing that a leader can do is have that level of honesty, but balance the honesty with strategic direction and vision for where that employee can go. So if you get a sense that maybe roles in finance are going to be cut or automated, sit down with your employees and say, hey, let's take a look at the different skills that you have. Focus on internal mobility. Right, that's another big trend that we're seeing over the coming years from a lot of executives that I talk to, is how do we take employees that we have who know the business, who are talented, who have a lot of different skills, and just because their role is gone, we don't want them out of the company, but we want to figure out maybe we can retrain them and upskill them. Maybe they're in finance. Maybe we can move them into another role like customer experience. Maybe they have skills that are relevant to HR. Maybe they have skills that are very relevant to operations or product or project management, and see how you can do those internal pivots. I think that's a very, very big initiative that organizations should be undertaking. But the idea that you shouldn't feel threatened, that you shouldn't have any fear, and that leaders should tell everybody that everything's going to be okay, I think is a terrible, terrible strategy.
You know, it's interesting. In the banking industry, as we interview people across the globe as to what they do in their organizations, we find that the best organizations, the organizations that are the most future-ready, tend to be those where leadership has embraced change that's happening around them, the thing that we all fear, which is change. And they've changed how they view the marketplace, how they implement their skill sets, how they communicate with employees, and how they deploy their intelligence into the organization. And those who stay with the same skills, with the same strategy, with the same business model from the past, tend to be falling behind.
Oh, yeah.
When you look at 2024 and you look at what's the difference between those executives that you already see, they get it, and those who are holding on to the past, what is the biggest trend or what's the biggest skill set that you see that difference between the winners and losers today? It's funny because I tell people, I can interview an executive in the banking industry within 5 minutes. I'm going to tell whether or not they're really walking the walk or if they're just talking the talk. Because right now, with things changing so fast, if you're not embracing that change, and maybe that's the skill set, if you're not embracing the change that's happening around you, you tend to fall behind very quickly, and it shows. What do you see in the marketplace overall that when you look and say, the difference in the way leadership's working today versus how it was implemented in the past? What is the major skill set?
Well, first, I think the big question that leaders should be asking themselves is, how can I think of myself like an app? Right? I mean, think about how many times you update the software on your iPhone, your computer. I mean, even my TV has updates like every week. It's constantly fixing bugs. It's constantly updating software, improving features. My car, I have a Tesla, constantly updating. Leaders, how often do you take a step back and ask yourself, well, how often am I updating myself? I mean, why should the TV or your phone be updating more often than you are? So what are you doing to update yourself? You should be the killer app, right? We talk about the killer app. You are that killer app. So as far as what separates those who get it versus those who don't, I think there's probably a few things. I think those who get it, it's sort of probably the best analogy I can think of is exercise. So I'm really big into exercise. I'm really big into eating healthy. And, you know, I've seen a lot of friends and I know a lot of people who usually start and then they stop. And I think the big problem with those who are able to stay healthy and those who don't is those who stay healthy view it as an ongoing journey. They know that there's never an end point. They know that this is a lifestyle, not a destination. Versus those who view it as short term, as, oh, I'm just going to get in shape and I have an endpoint here. Those are the ones who always fail because there is no endpoint. Because as soon as you get to a certain point where you like the way you look, you like the way you feel, if you don't keep going, you fall back. So what separates the leaders who get it versus those who don't? The leaders who don't get it view it as an endpoint. And they'll say, great, yeah, I'll do this transformation. I'm going to do whatever X, Y, Z. I stopped. I'm there. And then things change again. And they're like, no, I already did it. I already adapted. I already blah, blah. And the world keeps moving. Versus those, the other leaders who do get it say, I'm on board. Like, keep it. What else you got? Like, make the treadmill go faster. Make the incline go up higher. Add some weights on me. Like, I'm good. Like, this is just the way that business is going to get done. This is just the way that, you know, change is the constant. So I think that's a huge, huge factor there. And related to that is this idea of complacency, right? We're very comfortable being in our comfort zone. It's very hard to get into a cold plunge. Nobody wants to get into a cold plunge. It's freezing cold water. It's uncomfortable. You lose your breath. But then when you get out of it, you feel amazing. So a lot of leaders don't want to get into that cold plunge. A lot of leaders are like, ah, I'm good here. It's like 70 degrees. I got my comfy clothes on. I don't need to get into that cold plunge. That looks miserable. But the other leaders out there, they're getting up at 5 at 6. They're exercising. They're throwing themselves in the cold plunge and they're adapting and they're doing it all the time. So when you're too comfortable in your little bubble, I think a lot of bad things happen. So a lot of the successful leaders out there are constantly trying to figure out, how do I make myself uncomfortable on a regular basis? And part of that is who you surround yourself with. Part of that is how you spend your time. I remember I interviewed Frank Blake. He's the former CEO of the Home Depot. And he told me that one of the things that a lot of leaders forget is that leaders do more and they care more. But I think the mentality of a lot of people who get into leadership roles today is you can do less and you care less. You got into the executive role, cushy, comfortable spot, just chill out. You got the good parking spot, the salary, the benefits. I can, you know, I'm kind of coasting. But the reality is that from every CEO that I've ever interviewed, ever advised, ever worked with, these people work harder than everybody else. These are CEOs who are getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning so that they can have a little bit of time for themselves before they get into the office. These are CEOs who, you know, they are on all the time. They do more and they care more. They sacrifice. And that is, I think, the mentality that a lot of leaders forget that we need. So that, I think, is really some of the really important factors that separate those leaders who are able to adapt and those leaders who are not able to adapt. I think it's a muscle, and it's the difference between viewing it as a destination versus viewing it as just a lifestyle, a new way of how you live and work.
You know, it's interesting being in the banking industry. You know, one of the challenges, even though it works really well for the executives, is that no matter what size you're looking at, you see very few financial institutions ever cease to exist, ever fail. Yeah. In fact, they make money every year. Invariably, very, very few. I mean, we're talking less than a handful don't make money on a year to year. They may make more or less, but overall they're making money. And so the executives have always had success around them, and those executives around them have also experienced that. So what happens is if you listen to the same people who have the same thoughts, you're going to get the same result.
Yeah.
But the banking industry doesn't change fast enough to make you pay for that sin, so to speak. And I think...
Yeah. And I thought of one more, by the way, as well.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are exhausted with transformation. And I think instead of focusing on transformation, it's far more valuable to have a transformation mindset. I mean, think about how many transformations we keep talking about. A transformation in leadership, digital transformation in customer experience, transformation, blah, 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 blah. At a certain point, the leaders inside of a company are saying, enough. We have transformed enough. We went from the caterpillar to the butterfly. Now you want me to go from the butterfly to something like, how many transformations can we take on at the same time? And that's very true. I mean, think about it in your personal life. If you had to keep going on these transformations all the time and keep investing money and time and energy, you'd be burned out. At a certain point, you're like, enough. I don't want any more transformations. So it's far more valuable and scalable is to have a transformation mindset. And what that means is, you make gradual improvements over time instead of doing these really big projects. So for example, let's say that you are in banking and you have customers that you work with, and you see that you have maybe outdated procedures for how you meet with customers, how you deliver projects, how you communicate with customers, how you, you know, track certain things, whatever it might be. And these are policies that have been around since the 80s or 90s. The idea now is don't wait to a point where you get there and you say, we got to transform everything. The idea is as these things come up, point them out and adapt. So you need to encourage your employees to speak up and say, hey, I was meeting with so-and-so and I realized that this is kind of like an outdated way to do this. Is it okay if I just change it and do it like this instead? Yeah, sure. Go ahead. That's a transformation mindset. Right? Being able to make those improvements, right? There's a quote, I think it was Ben Franklin, right? Small strokes fell great oaks.
Yeah.
Meaning small improvements over a long period of time can yield to great impact. If you improve by 1% a day, by the end of the year, you'll be 37 times better.
Atomic habits. Yep. Wait. Exactly. Yep.
Don't wait for this like, we got to transform everything. Do these things in the now. If you're thinking about how you engage your employees, if somebody comes to you and says, our policies here are a little outdated, or, you know, why do we need to kind of expense this or expense that? Don't wait like a year or 2 years before you recreate your whole engagement strategy. Do those transformation things now, like make those quick changes. encourage your employees to speak up, encourage people to challenge you, encourage people to ask questions, to challenge convention, and create these quick, simple, small, and agile processes where you can just go instead of doing these whole big projects all the time.
You know, right? Simpson, you said it here too. As a leader, then you have to be able to accept those things you've asked people to do. So it's again that transformation mindset. It's you know, I look at ChatGPT and all the dynamics that come with that. It's making learning easier, but it's also making learning required. Yeah. Because in one sense, ChatGPT is getting smarter and smarter and smarter. Are you? On the other hand, because it's getting smarter and smarter, you can utilize that as a tool for continuous learning that makes you better every day. And you know, you talked about it before the podcast. You're writing books on an ongoing basis. You're writing white papers. You're doing all this. Well, part of that's to make money. Part of that's to educate the populace. But part of it's also educate you, because those elements make you learn what's going on and what's changed since the last time you wrote a book. And, you know, it's extraordinarily important. I think we rest on our laurels, and in banking, it tends to be easier than some industries, because right now, at least, there's less penalty for not doing so. But we're an industry that is living off of now composable solutions, which are small solutions that can be implemented to solve major problems that are time-based, that can be implemented quickly and easily. And the beauty of that is it allows you to continuously transform. It allows you to not say, I'm going to do a core transformation. No, it says, I'm going to change the new account opening process, or I'm going to change what the screen is on the mobile app. So let's take a short break here and recognize the sponsor of this podcast, but we're going to get back to ChatGPT. We're going to get back to the learning mentality, and also about how executives can become more like futurists. So we'll get back to that as soon as we hear from our sponsors. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Microsoft. See how Microsoft can help unlock new opportunities at speed and scale through innovative business processes, delivering differentiated customer experiences across channels, innovating new products and services, and redefining new ways of thinking. Find out more at Microsoft.com/financial services. Welcome back to Banking Transform. So I am joined today by best-selling author and noted leadership expert, Jacob Morgan. We've been exploring the challenges, opportunities, and strategies that banking leaders must embrace to become future-ready for themselves and also for the employees. So, Jacob, before the break, you were talking a lot about being prepared for what's coming up in the future, being prepared for change, continually educating yourself, and having a transformation mindset.
Yep.
You know, you advise leaders in your recent white paper to think like futurists, which is interesting because many leaders tend to fall to the, I've done it, now I can live off my laurels that I've done so well. How can executives apply scenario planning or embrace an innovation mindset to stay ahead of, or at least keep up with, change that's all around us?
It's a muscle. I probably the best analogy I can think of is chess. And so what separates a more amateur novice chess player from a chess player who's more seasoned? And there are many things, but one of them is the ability to think in terms of scenarios instead of thinking in terms of single paths. Yep. So an amateur player, like for example, if I'm teaching my daughter how to play chess, she's 7, you know, she'll move her pawn or something, and I'll say, well, you know, what can I do? And she'll say, well, you're going to move your bishop. And she thinks in terms of single moves, right? I make a move, you make a move, I make a move, you make a move.
Yep.
What a lot of more seasoned players think is they say, well, if I move my pawn, you have a couple different things that you could do. You could move your pawn, you could move your bishop, you could move your queen. And depending on what you do, I'm going to think of different options for each one of those different possibilities. That's what this idea of thinking like a futurist actually is. And a lot of people think that this is some kind of a fun title that you can slap on LinkedIn, but you can actually get a certification in foresight. You can get a master's degree in this. So I went to the University of Houston to get my professional certification in foresight. And what this does is there's a series of frameworks and processes and exercises that you can go through to help you think about different scenarios and possibilities that might come in the future. And one of the most famous ones, the most useful ones, and my favorite one that I sometimes go over with CEOs is called the cone of possibilities. And the Cone of Possibilities is this really cool visual that allows you to think up different scenarios that might happen. So imagine, for example, that you're looking through the narrow end of a cone. You know, maybe it's like one of those orange cones, those parking cones that you find out on the street, and pretend that you pick it up and you kind of, you look through the small hole. Yeah. Now, the way that you visualize this cone is that what's closest to you is the nearest time horizon. And the farther out in the cone that you look, the farther the time horizon becomes. Now, close to you, the cone is very narrow. So there's not that many possibilities and there's not that many options. But the farther out in the cone that you look, that's the longer time horizon, the wider the cone becomes. And the wider the cone becomes, the more space there is, the more possibilities that there are for different things to happen. And this is very relevant because a lot of people might know what happens tomorrow, next week, next month, maybe through the end of the year. But if somebody were to say, well, what do you think is going to happen to your business in 2 years, in 3 years, in 4 years, in 5 years? All of a sudden, it becomes very, very fuzzy. And so going through this exercise just helps you think about some of the things that might be possible. And there are four questions that I think are very useful for executives to go through. So the first is asking yourself, so first you write down, you know, a scenario that you think might happen. So let's say we think of automation, right? Automation in terms of banking. And I think, you know, ChatGPT is going to come by and it's going to replace, 10 million jobs in banking, like 10 million employees in banking are going to lose their jobs. So that's one scenario. Now you might ask yourself, well, why would that happen? Right? What would cause that to happen? What would cause 10 million banking professionals to lose their jobs in the banking sector with technology? Probably a few things would need to happen. So number one, something like ChatGPT would need to continue to grow in advance. Maybe we'd be at like ChatGPT 6.0. Number two, a lot of executives at these banking organizations would have to say, yeah, we don't need people anymore. Let's bring in the bots. Number three, we would have to stop with any kind of training and development programs. Number four, these individual employees would have to say, yeah, I'm not going to invest in any time and training and development. I'm okay to get replaced. And so you think about that scenario and you're like, well, you know, those things are probably not super likely. So then you ask yourself, well, what else might happen? Well, another scenario, and again, what else might happen? You can think of maybe two, three, four, five other scenarios. Maybe another scenario is that, yeah, certain aspects of your job get automated, but you as a human stay in the role, you stay in the company, but some of the work that you're doing is now augmented by AI. That's kind of the second question you ask. What else might happen? A third question we kind of alluded to as I was talking about the first one is what are some of the factors that would influence why something will or will not happen? So imagine you have your one scenario. Now you ask yourself, what else might happen? Now you have these other scenarios. Now the third question is, what might impact why each one of these scenarios will or will not happen? And you kind of write all those out. And then the fourth question you ask yourself is, what do you actually want to happen? Because one of the things that we forget is that the future of work isn't something that happens to us. The future of work is something that we can shape and design and create and build. And one of the things that a lot of leaders struggle with is they ask, well, what is the future going to look like? What is our business going to look like? But the reality is they should be saying, what is the future that we want to happen? How are we going to make that future happen? Right. What do we want our business to look like in this technology-driven world? And what steps are we going to take to make that future a reality? So I think if a lot of executives can visualize that cone, they can ask themselves these four questions, and you know, you can bring in a futurist to go through like multi-day workshop. I mean, there's a lot that you can do with this, but at least for yourself, just ask these questions, play around with these different scenarios, talk to your team, and you can start to, you know, see what sorts of things might come up and build that as a muscle. And it might sound silly, but learn how to play something like chess.
Well, it's interesting because that really gets into the whole aspect of building resilience, which now more than ever, if you're not prepared for different scenarios, you're unprepared. Now, that sounds logical, but the reality is the impact is so dramatic. I mean, we look in the banking world, interest rates have gone up after not moving for 5 to 10 years. We have savings accounts now being more important because interest rates have gone up, with a whole line of executives being hired that have never looked at new rates every week or the way I used to as a management trainee, looking at the dynamics of what is that impact. Generative AI. I mean, generative AI in a day change the entire industry and humans, because they could actually use it going forward to change the way they looked at the world. You know, and speaking of generative AI and ChatGPT, you know, obviously they're changing everything around us. What opportunities and challenges do you see from the executive perspective as to how generative AI and ChatGPT not only gets deployed, but how organizations get ready for the potential such?
I see tons of opportunities for leaders across any industry, even if you're in banking. I mean, you'd be surprised the types of things that you can put into ChatGPT to get help. For example, you can go into ChatGPT and say, you know, I have this employee who works for me. He is in customer service. He's really good at people skills. He's really good at marketing. He's really good at things related to emotional intelligence, but he's looking to transition into a role that's a little bit more focused on analytics. He has some high-level understanding, but he really wants to do a deep dive into analytics and shift into that role in the business. Can you come up with a six-month training program for this employee with recommended topics and courses and an outline of how he should spend his time each day, max 2 hours a day, to learn how to upskill and retrain himself so that he can make this transition? And please give me links to any relevant courses that exist online that he can take. And ChatGPT will give you a personalized training solution that you can give this employee to help him move from his role in customer service into a role in analytics. Now, if you think about what that required in the past, it was enormous time-intensive resource, probably required meetings, getting together teams, doing research online, looking at the different... It was
consultants. I mean...
Nobody
had all that skill set in their minds.
Exactly.
So you have to go to people that did this for a living. Yep.
So now you can see these types of amazing things that you can do with ChatGPT. I'm preparing for a one-on-one meeting, right? Upload a previous performance appraisal into ChatGPT and say, I have a one-on-one meeting with this employee. Help me prepare for it. What are some good questions I can ask this employee because I want him to excel in these three particular areas, or I want to put him or her on a leadership track over the next 1 or 2 years. Like, give me some questions that I can ask and some topics that we should discuss, or give me a template. I want to evaluate my employees. I want to have a performance appraisal template that I can use that focuses on these key areas of people management, of analytics, and on customer service. It'll give you a template. Like, having this kind of an assistant, having this kind of a resource is enormously valuable. Let's say you want to send a message. Yeah, you want to send a message to your team.
Yep.
And let's say you want to send a message to your team and you say, maybe you drafted an email and you want to get improvements on that email. So you might go to ChatGPT and say, hey, you know, this month or this quarter, my team, we didn't meet our numbers. And so I want to draft an email to my employees, which highlights a couple things. I wanted to highlight the need and the urgency for us to make sure that we can meet our goals next quarter. But at the same time, I also want to acknowledge how hard my team has been working. I also want to let my team know that I am proud of the work that we did and that even though we fell short of our goals, that I'm very optimistic about what the next quarter could look like. Help me draft that kind of an email that conveys those points. And you can either maybe input something that you've already written or ask ChatGPT to create something for you. And you'll be amazed at the types of things that it can create. So having this kind of a smart assistant, I think, is invaluable for leadership.
It can look for gaps. You know, you mentioned about the employee appraisal plan. You can say, here's our current employee appraisal plan. If you were to improve this to make it so it's more dynamic and ready for what the future brings, how would I look at doing that? Show me what it should look like. What's interesting, it may not give you the answers, but it may show you some blind spots. I found that to be the most innovative and most exciting part about generative AI and ChatGPT is that I give it, you know, an article topic I'm going to write, and it it helped me look for things that I wasn't going to write about, but I said that's an important component of what I was going to do. Heck, I use ChatGPT to prepare for this podcast. I say, you know, what should my introduction be? What are some questions I should ask based on what you've written and what I've learned? And it may, as I said, your ability to say it may not be perfect, but to be that great assistant that can look for the gaps. Lee and my team know that we have this person who was on, who was an author that wrote a book with 32 different people. And those 32 different people each had a chapter. And he asked ChatGPT, for each of these chapters, if you're going to write, only give it a one-star review, why did it only get one star? So as opposed to saying, how can I make this better? It said, what happened here was my blind spot. Which you can accept or not accept. And as you know, it's for people that say, oh, I don't believe in ChatGPT. I don't need it. The reality is you may not like it because you weren't asking the right questions. It really helps in asking those questions. So
tremendous value.
Jacob, as we're looking to finalize this podcast, you know, two things come to mind. One is, what do you see as the biggest gap in leadership today based on where you think it should be?
Biggest gap is this idea that we talked about at the very beginning of combining leadership with vulnerability, competence with connection. I think we're very much forgetting about the performance and the leadership aspect. And I hope that 2024, that's going to be the big trend that we bring back.
The second question is, if I was wanting to become a leader, and I'm not one right now, and I want to find the way I can become a better leader, where do I focus my energy?
Well, number one, you don't need anybody's permission. You don't need to ask anybody for anything. You can decide to become a better leader and learn the things that you need. I think there are a lot of great resources out there. I'd like to think that I contributed to some of those resources with some of the books that I've put together. But there's lots of, there's leadership books, there's podcasts, there's articles. You make the time and make the investment into becoming the leader that you want to be. Probably the best thing that you can do is surround yourself by other leaders at your company. Number one, find the leader inside of your organization who you would like to emulate. Try to get some time with them or watch them, observe them, pay attention to how they lead meetings, how they talk to people, how they make decisions, and just observe. You have a lot of leaders in your company. You have a lot of leaders that you're surrounded by every single day. Pay attention to both the good ones and the bad ones and what's working and what's not.
Well, it's interesting because ChatGPT can help you with that too. If you're a public company and it's a leader that's prominent in the industry, you can actually ask ChatGPT, how can I become like this person? It is crazy what it comes up with and how on spot it is, because it's the same dynamics, the same questions, the same inquiries, no matter who the leader is. A lot of the stuff is consistent. So Jacob, again, thank you so much for being on the show. I always enjoy our time together. I also realize you are the king of content. I mean, I feel like I'm putting out stuff all the time, but you always have emails, you have podcasts, you have presentations, you have LinkedIn posts, you have, you know, your books and your white papers. How do people stay in touch with what you're doing and the dynamic nature of what being a leader means today?
There are a few resources. So one, we talked about this new PDF. People can go to topleadershiptrends.com and download the PDF. I like to give people my email, which is jacob@thefutureorganization.com. I also have a podcast. All my socials and all that stuff is available at thefutureorganization.com. You know, but I also try to share some things on a Substack column that I have, which is greatleadership.substack.com. And then people are interested in the book, that's just leadwithvulnerability.com.
And obviously Amazon, every other way. But Jacob, you're a wealth of resource, you're a wealth of information, I should say. And really enjoyed the conversation. And, you know, I'm a person that continues to beat our own industry up, that I don't think our industry has leaders that really change their industry and their organizations enough. And, you know, for our industry, the place where I'm finding the best leadership are at the smallest and the biggest organizations. It's those in the middle that sometimes use the excuse of, I don't have enough money or the regulations don't allow me. And on the other hand, they're going, but I've had 23 amazing years of success. Why should I mess with it? Well, it depends on your personality a lot of times. It doesn't kill you. So, Jacob, thank you again. Tell your wife I said hello, and congratulations on all the, you know, all that you guys are both doing.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Banking Transformed, the top podcast in retail banking and the winner of 3 international awards for podcast excellence. We appreciate the support we've received to make this endeavor a success. If you enjoy what we're doing, please take some time to give some love in the form of a review. Finally, be sure to catch my recent articles on the financial brand and check out the research we're doing for the Digital Banking Report. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcast. A special thank you to our senior producer, Leah Hassett, and our audio engineer and video producer, Will Pritz. If you've not already done so, remember to subscribe to Banking Transformed on both your favorite podcast app and on YouTube for more thought-provoking discussions on the intersection of finance, technology, and leadership.
The Jim Stroud Podcast explores the discoveries and trends forming the future of our lives. Brain-to-brain communication, robot bosses, microchip implants for workers, and artificial intelligence replacing human workers are all happening now. If you want to know what's happening next, subscribe now to the Jim Stroud Podcast.